Hi everyone, I'm Gary Null. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our theme today, who or what is behind so much of the misinformation that has occurred during the COVID two-year program that we've been experiencing. We've been told to take certain protocols. We've been told to take tests. We've been told to take vaccines and then boosters of the vaccines. We've been told that children are equally exposed as any adult, and therefore they must also be tested and take vaccines, including even boosters. We've been told not to get any treatment whatsoever, no matter what your symptoms, and just wait at home till your lips turn blue and you have to be rushed to the hospital and put on one of Anthony Fauci's favorite drugs, Remdesivir, and also to take intubation. And all of this, the average person has done. The doctors who've come forward to talk about some questions they've had initially are all pro-vaccine orthodox doctors. In my entire career, both as a PhD in human nutrition and public health science, senior research fellow in anti-aging medicine at the Institute of Applied Biology, 50 clinical studies published in peer-reviewed literature, and seen tens of thousands of people one-on-one to help them, I have never seen this in my life. I've never seen the ultra-orthodox science medical community, pro-vaccine, pro-medicine, fight the orthodox medical community, pro-vaccine. This is a unique experience. I've never seen people with impeccable credentials from Yale, Harvard, Oxford, and Columbia have their reputations trashed because they advocated for an inexpensive, completely safe therapeutic to be used early in the treatment, such as ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. I've never seen the media deny the peer-reviewed scientific literature supporting these treatments. Richard Gell and myself produced two articles at the very beginning of the pandemic, before there was a vaccine, a year before the vaccine, and we said, this is all coming from the Library of Medicine's PubMed. And in that, you're going to get all of the drugs or nutrients that are backed up by thousands of studies of how vitamin D3 and zinc and vitamin C and quercetin and other nutrients supported by the scientific literature could help protect your immune system and lessen the likelihood of being infected or making sure that you were better off because your immune system was strong. And the same we did with ivermectin. We found hundreds of studies in the peer-reviewed literature supporting ivermectin when it was being condemned. Clinical studies, doctors' experiences, the Houston doctor who found 2,000 patients, not one, not a single patient who had COVID had to go to a hospital. These were all outpatients treated using all the things I just mentioned. And yet, what was her reward for saving 2,000 lives? She was fired from the hospital and then attacked by the local media. We had over 100,000 scientists and physicians signing the Great Barrington Declaration, written by a professor at Oxford, professor at Harvard, professor at Stanford University, saying that we were approaching this wrong, that the model of what we should do was a flawed model done by a professor at Imperial College London. And yet that protocol, which is the basis of all the other things done, was flawed, grossly flawed. It was never changed. But the doctors were attacked. Now there are hundreds of thousands of doctors and clinicians and scientists and academics who are saying enough. But outside of that, there's another person saying enough. And this person, in my opinion, is someone who has enormous courage. His name is Edward Dowd, D-O-W-D. He is a consultant for Symphonic Capital, a U.S. and German financial firm analyzing risk management performance for S&P 500 market opportunities, where he advises on market and risk strategies. He is also a former managing director for large cap growth equities at BlackRock, one of the world's top three corporate and banking asset holders. Given his extensive background in Wall Street and finance, Ed has observed glaring inconsistencies in between official COVID pandemic reports and the actual on-the-ground data regarding vaccine injuries. The conclusion and message he has been trying to bring to people's attention, and especially Wall Street's attention, is that we are dealing with enormous vaccine fraud. due to a collusion between the government and the COVID vaccine makers, notably Moderna and Pfizer. Ed earned his bachelor's degree at the University of Notre Dame and an MBA in finance from Indiana University. And he has taken his reputation, which was stellar and secure for his future. And he's a relatively young man. And he put it all on the line because in the field that he's in, you do not challenge the most powerful corporations in the world. And yet he had the courage to challenge it, which means he's no fool. He's very bright. That just like all the other, Dr. Malone and all the other doctors, Dr. Cole, etc., that we've had on this program, they were all attacked. Some had their license revoked or attempted to revoke them, not because it could be proven they did anything wrong. They were accurate on every single count, but because they did not align with those of Anthony Fauci and Bill Gates, the World Health Organization, Gavi, CDC, National Institutes of Health, etc. And so they destroyed them. But he comes with reason and information from a financial market perspective, which is rare. We welcome to our program to share his insights. Nice to have you with us today, Ed.
Thank you, Gary, for that great introduction. Appreciate it.
We're delighted you can join us because you are raising some crucial, important information for us to be better assessing the propaganda fed to us by the mainstream media vis-a-vis the media's tight collusion with the official government narrative about the pandemic and vaccine mandates as the only means to lessen the pandemic. And rather than this information coming from the medical community, which is what we have more frequently focused on, what you're offering comes from the financial sector. And over the past year, since the rollout of the vaccines, this is completely being ignored. So I do have some questions, which I would like to ask you later about the role large financial institutions have played in prolonging the pandemic. However, we should first speak about the evidence that suggests there is gross fraud in the vaccine narrative, especially the message that Biden, Fauci, Walensky at the CDC and across the mainstream media that the COVID vaccines are both safe and effective. 95% safe, we're told, and effective. So why don't you begin, please, with laying out your case that a global fraud is being committed to push primarily the RNA vaccines on the public, and why this is particularly worrisome that Pfizer and Moderna are leading this along with the FDA and CDC and show they are determined to have every American vaccinated over the age of 2, perhaps even as young as 6 months, even though there is no science that I can find as a scientist that would support what they're doing. And this includes the trends you have observed in insurance stocks and the more recent report from the German insurance industry showing that there is a 10-fold higher vaccine injury rate than what the German health authorities are reporting. Please begin. The forum is yours. Take your time. We're non-commercial.
Thank you. So I apologize. There's some landscapers around. So if the noise becomes too great, let me know. Let me begin by saying when this began and the vaccine was introduced in January, it was touted as 95% effective. And I did not take the vaccine. And the reason I did not, I only knew two things at the time. That warp speed anything sounds like a disaster because corners will be cut and safety protocols might be ignored. I also knew that a normal vaccine takes 7 to 10 years of safety data before it's introduced to the public. So with that, those two points in my mind, I said, I'll wait. And early on, in April, May, June of 2021, we started to hear anecdotes, lots of anecdotes of injuries and potentially deaths. And knowing how math works and knowing about vaccine safety, most vaccines do have some adverse reactions and some deaths, but they're so rare that you should never know someone who had any of these things occur. And I was hearing of people who had died, and I was hearing of people who had adverse reactions. And statistically, that makes no sense. So I knew something was terribly off. Then in the fall, what made me become so public on Twitter to some of my followers in the financial community was that the FDA had decided to hide the clinical trial data for 75 years. And when I heard that, having dealt with a lot of fraud in my career on Wall Street, that just, I immediately said, this is a public institution. The data is paid for by taxpayers. This is fraud. This is a cover-up of a fraud. So I immediately said fraud. I just claimed that. I didn't need to see anything else. That's just simple logic. You don't hide data for 75 years. Number two, I started to get some notoriety. Dr. Malone had come to the island. I had met him, become friends with him, and he started to boost my signal, and he was appreciative of my financial background and my unique ability to say fraud because it's an investment thesis. He was worried about his medical license and whatnot, and I had no medical license to be taken away. And I can couch the accusations of fraud in terms of a medical thesis. And is this noise becoming too great for you?
No, it's fine.
Okay. I was able to couch the medical thesis, the fraud in terms of an investment thesis. And then the other thing was, due to my notoriety rising, I was able to get into contact with Brooke Jackson, the Ventavia whistleblower. She was very instrumental in blowing the whistle on this in November of last year. She went to the British Medical Journal, where she was able to prove to them via lots of receipts and documentation that the clinical data had been fraudulent. That news story came out in November. Unfortunately, it was buried by the censorship you've alluded to, Gary. What seems to be a blackout of all sorts of data pertaining to vaccine issues. So her story went by the wayside. She saw me on Steve Bannon's show, and she was then able to contact me, where I've been able to talk to her and see that the clinical data was fraudulent. In her 1,000 patients, they unblinded the study, Gary. And as you know, having been in involved in medicine and medical practice, that is a no-no, and that data should have been thrown out. It was not. It was rolled up into the 44,000 total trial patient study. Per Pfizer's own clinical protocols, it should have been thrown out. It was not. Brooke brought this to the attention of the Ventavia management, which is the contract company doing the clinical trials, and they started to turn their tone on her in a very decided fashion. She then decided she was not going to be part of this cover-up, and she went to the FDA on a Friday in the morning at 9, made an anonymous complaint claiming what she had found. By 3 that afternoon, she was fired, and then a few days later, a Pfizer lawyer tried to reach out to her. The reason why she didn't come out until recently is because she did a whistleblower suit. And in a whistleblower suit, she was joined with the FDA to investigate this. In a whistleblower suit, you're not allowed to talk about the case. Well, the FDA kept kicking the so-called football down the field on her and delaying and delaying and delaying. And she decided to, against the advice of her lawyer, come out in November. So her bravery should be noted as well. And just to put some math on this, in the hallmark 95% effective trial data that you referenced earlier, Gary, the numbers are this. In the total trial that only lasted 28 days, which is ridiculous on its face, 8 in the vaccine group got COVID and 164 in the placebo group got COVID. That's how they calculated 95% effective. In Brooke's observance of her 1,000 patients, they were unblinded. So when you unblind, every doctor who was testing patients for COVID saw on the chart that the patient was either vaccinated or unvaccinated. That should not have occurred because bias can be introduced. So if you have some doctors that decided, well, they probably don't have COVID because they're vaccinated and did not test for COVID, you move 75 of Brooke's 1,000 over to the left column, the column with the vaccine group, the efficacy drops to 50%. you move all 164 of the 1,000 over, which is absolutely possible, you have 0% efficacy. And I will say this, if her site, there was unblinding and she has so much documentation of fraud, it would make your head swim of different types of fraud. I would say where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's other sites that were compromised as well. And this is just the way they do things at the Ventavia clinical trial site, sites in total. And it should also be noted that the two sites that Brooke oversaw were given awards by Pfizer for doing such a bang up job after the clinical trial results were made available. So what we have essentially is a vaccine that was fraud from the get-go. Then we started to hear of injuries. The VAERS data system started to explode. And unfortunately, I knew that it would show up in real world results eventually. And that's when people might start paying attention. So we have the VAERS database. Then we got the DoD leak by Tom Renz, which showed horrendous all sorts of deaths, adverse reactions, cancers exploding 300%, neurological problems up 1,000%. And then we started getting the insurance company and the funeral home results coming in. And in January of this year, a reporter by the name of Margaret Menge in Indiana picked up on the fact that a town hall Chamber of Commerce meeting in progress with the CEO of One America, he voiced concerns that he had seen 40% increase in all-cause mortality in the second half of 2021. He didn't blame the vaccines. I don't think he knew. I don't think he was covering up. He's in the dark like a lot of people are. What was interesting is he called out the increase in the number of young people who died in this second half of 2021. And he also put some meat on the bones, so to speak, mathematically. A 10% increase in all-cause mortality would have been a 3-standard deviation event for this insurance company, which in and of itself is a big deal mathematically. A 40% increase is what he called a once-in-a-200-year flood. So we that went viral. People started to take note. And then the other insurance companies came in and reported in the first week of February, not that long ago. And because of my notoriety, a Wall Street ex insurance analyst who used to cover insurance companies for a Wall Street bank on the sell side reached out to me to help me with my efforts to analyze the insurance companies. And I'm just going to give you a quick, brief summary of some of the numbers we found. So we were analyzing group life policies because the nature of the accounting would make the results show up quicker. Individual life policies have different accounting, and so it won't show up there as quickly due to the Byzantine actuarial assumptions. But group life is priced mark to market, so we focused on that part of the insurance results, and this is what we found. Unum Insurance plus 36%, and we're comparing the loss ratio, which is the death claims versus the Q4 rate, the Q4 rate of loss ratios in 2021 versus the baseline rate of 2019. Unum Insurance was up 36%. Lincoln National up 57%. Prudential up 41%. Reinsurance Group of America up 21%. Hartford up 32%. MetLife up 24%. Principal Financial Group up 37%. And in the Dutch Netherlands, there's an insurance company called Aegon. In the third quarter of 2021, their claims went up 258%, and in the fourth quarter, 51%. And they actually called out something called indirect COVID deaths, whatever that means. I think we know what that means. And they also decided to raise their expectations for COVID and indirect COVID deaths to 300,000 in the U.S. in 2022, up from 2021. We also saw funeral home results. Business is quite good there, unfortunately. Two companies reported they saw acceleration in the second half of 21. Their stocks, which did not much of anything in 2020, which was when COVID hit us before pre-vaccine, their stocks didn't do much, but their stocks have been exploding into the end of 2021 And Carriage Services reported last week, and they saw trends continuing. They're quite excited because they're in the death business, but they said that their business reaccelerated in December from November, and they have given some preliminary January results. And apparently January business accelerated as well. So what we have here is real world data that something has gone wrong. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to ask this question, which I guess questions are not allowed to be asked these days, but I'm asking them anyways. In a year when we introduce a so-called miracle vaccine, why are COVID deaths in the second half of, why are deaths, all-cause mortality rising in the second half of 21? Why are young people dying at a higher rate than normal, than more rapidly than older people? And why are funeral homes seeing fabulous business? All the while, last night, Joe Biden came out and said that everything's fine, we don't need masks. Fauci's even said the pandemic's ending. So it makes no sense to anybody that uses logic and reason as to why we'd be seeing these death accelerations into the end of this year, given these miracle vaccines and the pandemic ending. So the only conclusion I can make, which is a logical one, is that we experienced fraud from the get-go. The FDA, unfortunately, appears to be in on it because they're in collusion with Big Pharma here to hide the data. I believe the institution's been thoroughly corrupted. And here we are. This is where we sit, Gary. We sit with a national tragedy, a global tragedy, actually, because death rates are going, or other countries are experiencing similar death rates, especially in the most vaccinated countries. So this is where we are, Gary. Unfortunately, I've seen frauds before. I saw the corporate fraud in the dot-com fiasco. I saw the housing fraud in the great financial crisis. And there is a parallel between the two. That housing fraud was so big. How did that happen? Well, a third-party trusted institution known as the rating agencies gave their stamp of approval to these AAA-rated bonds that Wall Street was spitting out at huge volumes. And what happened in that institution, it became corrupted with money, and they just kind of let these things go. And a lot of insurance companies, pension funds, and investors relied on these third-party trusted institutions for verification of the wholeness of these bonds, which were AAA-rated, which dropped 60% in the great financial crisis. Let's fast forward to today. The FDA is a third-party trusted institution. And as you know, Gary, most doctors do not check clinical trial data. Most are not trained in that specialty, and they just assumed everything was fine. And that's why so many people push this. And this fraud never could have occurred without the complicit nature of the FDA and obviously the CDC, who we now know has been hiding data from us. That came out last Monday. And also the media is involved in this fraud because, and the tech overlords who run the social media, through censorship, they denied any kind of discussion of early treatment, as you know. So that was shut down in 2020. And now they've been shutting down any kind of scientific inquiry into vaccine injuries or deaths. And in my opinion, they're complicit or accomplices to murder, in my opinion.
Do you have any perspective on Wall Street's overall evaluation about the pandemic? Surely since the street is so heavily invested in it, and is it not just Moderna and Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson and Gilead who makes the useless drug Remdesivir, but hundreds of others, such as the large HMOs and other medical product providers, each tech and private intelligence companies contracted to create surveillance systems who profit immensely. The financial community must be keeping track of trends that might indicate this entire house of cards could implode or collapse, just like the subprime collapse. I remember once hearing the head of the Fed at the time, Alan Greenspan, and I don't remember the number he said, but it was, I believe, in the hundreds or thousands of economists that he had in PhDs. And he bragged about how many PhDs he either had at the Fed or had that he could consult with. It was a huge number, more than any other person in America would have available to them. And yet he claims they never saw the crash coming. And I cannot believe that, because many of us saw the crash coming. We had too much debt, too many people getting liar's loans, and yet no institution took credit for causing any of this, and yet the very institutions that caused it were the first ones bailed out. And I thought that was such a fraud in and of itself. To this day, Obama, Bush, none of the people responsible for this, Paulson, none of them have been held accountable for the people they bailed out, in effect, a legal form of money laundering, took all their bad debt, washed it out, then gave them all new money at zero interest or just about, so they could buy up their competitors, where the average small business person didn't get a dime. The average homeowner got evicted with no executive orders to stop that. So I'm seeing something similar to this in the House of Cards imploding now with everything involving COVID. So are there any important trend changes among investors that you are observing with respect to how the handling of the pandemic is unfolding?
Yeah, so you got to remember, a lot of people in your audience and all across America think Wall Street's a cabal of like-minded people. It's actually a bunch of different institutions competing against each other, and that's what makes a market. There are some corrupt actors on Wall Street sometimes, and sometimes they have insider information. But I think early on, the majority of Wall Street bought what was going on in the narrative being sold to them. And so they did what Wall Street does. They see, oh, vaccine companies, I'll buy those. Oh, are we going to do vaccine passports? That sounds like a good, like they didn't realize what they were signing up for when these stocks started to take off, the tech social media giants and whatnot. My friend who I consult with, that I may start a hedge fund with, he was tracking what he called the Davos Index, all the darlings of control and then dominance. The good news is that they're rolling over. The good news is the pharma vaccine stocks, Pfizer, Moderna, are rolling over. And I think what's dawning on people on Wall Street is that the bodies are piling up. Unfortunately, the injuries are there for all to see. And I don't think a lot of people on Wall Street are really big fans of being forced to jab themselves by their employer. You got to remember, most of Wall Street bought into this nonsense. They were fooled too. And a lot of these people that are now turning on this narrative have been jabbed and regret it and feel duped. So that's why I think you're right, Gary. The trends are reversing, because whatever harebrained thoughts were in their heads when they concocted this, I don't think they ever war game what would happen when the real world results started piling up. And it's becoming undeniable to even, those who still buy into this narrative, it's starting to dawn on them too, that something's gone way off the reservation here. And the good news is that Wall Street's starting to listen to people like me and others. The stocks, Gary, started rolling over before I became more well known. So people smarter than me had already picked up on this, that something had gone wrong with the clinical trial data, and that the government may be involved in this. So it's reversing, Gary. That's the good news. And it's going to continue to reverse as time goes on. The mainstream media may try to push this under the radar screen, but as people like you continue to speak the truth, and by the way, thank you so much for speaking the truth. I appreciate so much the opportunity to come here today because of people like you and alternative voices. The mainstream media is dying, and you guys are becoming the mainstream media, and that's really why these trends are reversing. More and more people don't trust what they're being told.
I want to follow up on one point you made, please. And I'm going to do a little historical review for it. When I grew up in a small town in West Virginia on the Ohio River, every single person I knew smoked. In my family, I was the only one who didn't smoke, but my father, mother, my two brothers smoked. All of my aunts and uncles smoked. And it was not uncommon to smoke 3 packs, some even 4 packs a day. They also drank, not to get drunk. It was just a social issue. They drank. They ate a standard American diet, which was not even healthy back then, way too much meat and potatoes. And they didn't exercise. And they generally held their stress in. It was something that we were taught, that don't bear your burden to our neighbors because they've got their own burdens. And so people suffered in silence. And one day I asked my mother, I walked into a room and it was just pillows of smoke. And I said, Mom, I said, this can't be good for you. Her answer was relatively straightforward. She said, if smoking was bad, my doctor, who's a friend of the family, would have told me. And he's a medical doctor, Gary. I was just a teenager at the time. What do I know? It took over 100 years for the truth about the addiction and nicotine's active ingredients and what it does to the human body to become known. And that was not done by any governmental scientist, anyone in the medical community, anyone in the media, except for 60 Minutes and Mike Wallace. He brought on a whistleblower who had worked for a major tobacco company and took secret documents. But those documents were also in the hands of the FDA. And here's the point. Going clear back, the FDA has been corrupt and captured. And if you're captured, you're corrupt. And they had in their files, but would never release any information to Congress or the public, that they knew that these smoking was dangerous and would lead to emphysema and cancer, etc. I did the analysis and came up with a figure of around 9 million Americans have died of smoke-related injuries. That's an awful lot of people. That's medical genocide. And yet the government could have stopped it. Right now, the same FDA, fully captured by the pharmaceutical industry, and gets a lot of its income from them, as does the CDC, and many of the members of their advisory boards that advise on the safety and efficacy of a drug and permit it go forward, have gross conflicts of interest. And the scientists that they are recommending as experts they bring in are themselves getting money from Anthony Fauci and have. So you have thousands upon thousands of scientists who've received billions of dollars collectively over the last several decades. And so when a drug is bad, and you mentioned correctly so, there were 25 deaths. Initially, it was 21 deaths. Later, it was reported as 50 deaths, but 25. They banned it, and they went after the people responsible. And it was the same Mike Wallace who went after the head of the CDC, saying, didn't you see all these side effects? No, I didn't know it. But a top employee said, yes, he did. I told him about how bad it was. What happened? He wouldn't pay attention. And so nothing happened to anybody, except the people that end up with Guillain-Barré syndrome or other conditions and or died. But that was enough to wake America's consciousness. Something was wrong here. We learned nothing from it. So the same FDA that hid for 100 years the information about how dangerous tobacco was, who hid what asbestos was, who hid the dangers of DDT and DDE and aldrin, heptachlor, and copper coral 7 and Asian orange, they hid all this. They knew it, hid the dangers of artificial sweeteners. They knew it and they hid it, because I've been writing articles against all these things my entire career. Not once has any governmental agency ever been ahead of the curve, always behind, always being forced, including with autism and vaccines, and still lying about it. So when it comes today, and then the media trusting with one voice, you'll see the same thing said on every television program around the world, just like, oh, the Great Reset. Or you'll own nothing and be happy. We're hearing it over and over again, Klaus Schwab's idea. No, we're not going to give up everything we own because someone, a stakeholder, is going to own what we own and we're going to be given some money? No. So a small, relatively small group of people, I'm guessing between Davos and the World Economic Forum and all the people who are in governmental agencies, including Trudeau's, half of his entire cabinet was made up of people who were a part of the advanced elite group who studied with Klaus Schwab since 1991. So these people are already fully conditioned about what to do, and they took advantage of COVID. Now, I cannot prove at this moment that COVID was created and weaponized in order to gain control. That I cannot, and I don't go there. But can we prove that it was made in a lab? Yes, we can. Because multiple scientists from around the world, top geneticists and top virologists, have shown that the spike protein, including the winner of the Nobel Prize, Luc Montagnier, who is arguably the most decorated scientist in all of France's history, even more than Pasteur or Bichon, and he won the Nobel Prize. He says this was made in a lab, and his whole group at the Institute of Pasteur, no slouches at the Institute of Pasteur, they're one of the most brilliant group of scientists outside the Max Planck Institute in Germany, and they said the way these HIV genes are in here, you can't have HIV genes from a wet market, from bats. No, this was planted. Others have shown other plants that can create Christoph Jacob's disease or mad cow disease. They're in there. So now we're finding what's actually in there. None of this could have come from nature. Now, can we prove who did it, when, and what their purpose was? No. But there's a lot of smoke there. In time, someone in China probably, someone associated with the Chinese Communist Party Defense Research Center at Wuhan will blow the whistle, probably when they get out of the country. But until that time, we have the government still saying, and the New York Times still saying, and the Journal of the Medical Association still saying, oh, it came from a bat market, therefore no one can be held accountable. Because if it's ever shown that in anything that Anthony Fauci funded or his partners in this, in North Carolina, in Canada, and in New York, and he gave out millions and millions of dollars, then this whole entire house of cards collapses, and then the manufacturers are going to be brought in, because if it's shown, and this is, Edward, this is very important for you, and might direct your energies, if it's shown that any manufacturer knowingly produced a vaccine with knowledge, forethought and knowledge, that it was dangerous, or the actual side effects were not all being reported, then their indemnification is null and void. They can be sued.
Yes.
So these are just some additions to this. And what is the status of Moderna's stock value? How much have they lost? And what about Pfizer?
Moderna has lost 70% of its stock value since August of last year. Pfizer held up better and went to a new high in December of last year, and it's dropped about 23% year to date. The drop in Pfizer, in Moderna, it's a single product company. So if it can be proven that these products are fraudulent, which in my humble opinion they are, and they should have been removed from the market a long time ago, that stock is going to go to zero. It'll be bankrupted by all the lawsuits. And Pfizer is a multi-product company. It has some other products. Their stock will also come under assault if it can be proven there was fraud, because not only will individuals sue Pfizer, the governments of the globe who signed Pfizer contracts may sue as well, because a lot of these governments signed these contracts. And fraud vitiates all contracts and makes them null and void, as you said. So Pfizer's stock could potentially go bankrupt. I'm thinking it probably, it's a $47 stock today, probably could get down below 10 at some point and then have to settle. But, you know, there has to be someone who has to pay a penalty for this in terms of jail time. I don't know who that will be. And I don't, I'm just an investor with an investment thesis. It's becoming pretty evident to myself and others that my thesis has a lot of credibility. And the proof, unfortunately, Gary, is in the pudding. I mean, these people dying and these injuries are just, they can't hide it anymore. So it's just a question of if, not when, there's more of a consciousness and awakening to what has really gone on.
One more follow-up on that. The reason I mentioned the FDA covering up for big tobacco for almost 100 years, and they had never lost a lawsuit up to that point, and then they lost all the lawsuits, and then the state attorney generals fine them somewhere, I believe it was over $200 billion that they had to pay over a certain amount of years to each state, et cetera, to cover the Medicaid costs of the treating people with the cigarette-related mm-hmm. injuries. But right now, Pfizer's trying to get the same FDA to give a long period of time. First, it was 55 years. Now it's 76 years before all the information comes out. Now, just common sense. You don't have to be an investor. You don't have to be a scientist. You don't have to, just a regular common sense person say, hold on a second. You, right up front, you told us it was safe and effective, 95% effective and completely safe. Now we see that that's not true. Now we see, based upon the information you gave us, that more people have been injured worldwide by a mathematical extrapolation, hypothesis, than all of the World War casualties in the last century altogether. And yet no one in the media, not a single person has broke ranks, not a single person has gone out to interview the victims, the nurse that I'm sure you saw it, the nurse who comes out at all the media's there, cameras, and she says, I'm here to show you about the vaccine. She had her vaccine within a minute. She collapsed, and then she died.
I saw that.
Right? And then you think, well, surely that should wake people up. Soccer players. You never hear of soccer players dropping dead on the fields. Basketball players. These are highly, highly conditioned people with great immune systems. Football players, track stars, skiers, soccer players all over the world, hundreds upon hundreds dropping dead. And then they check and they had endocarditis, they had heart conditions, and yet we're told, oh, it's just a coincidence. And so they don't want you to open that door to show you all the suffering that has occurred. But sooner or later with litigation, it is going to open. Now, one of the people suing is a friend of mine, Robert Kennedy Jr. And Robert was one of the three different law groups that sued Monsanto. Here's what we found about Monsanto, a darling of Wall Street, of course, and a darling of the regulatory agencies, that when that one gentleman who tended the lawns, that maintenance person, was found to have his cancer due to his exposure to glyphosate in the pesticide Roundup, he was awarded a lot of money. There's now been over 100,000 awards given out, about $12 billion, and there's still 25,000 more that are still suing. But in the discovery, they found that there were thousands, 15,000 documents that Monsanto had, and it showed all the different cancers from their own scientists that would cause cancer in the body. And yet people knew that existed, and no one shared that with the public. Once again, the entirety of the United States government and all of its regulatory agencies failed us. The entirety of our justice system failed because no lawsuits were brought at that point by our Justice Department. It had to be individuals suing. So where in the heck do we expect the truth to come when Pfizer doesn't want you to know anything about the outcome for 76 years? And how many people are going to be alive in 76 years to look at this evidence? Shouldn't that raise a lot of red flags?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, on its face, what you just said, to anybody using just basic critical thinking skills, the word fraud should be on everyone's lips. And to your point, no one in the mainstream media dared even ask the question why they were doing that. I mean, I'm just speechless that here we are, Gary. And to your point, the regulators aren't going to come save us. They've proven that time and time again. It's going to come down to mass noncompliance. If you have a job and it requires the jabs, I mean, you have a decision. And it's going to take a lot of grassroots efforts to get the word out. And I do believe one of the pinch points is the political arena. And we can put pressure on these people. And if we're going to, I'm not on the red team or the blue team. I'm on team humanity. We can vote them all out and put in a bunch of new people. I don't care what color they are. We just put wholesale new candidates in who are going to listen to us and not take super PAC drug money. This is the only way I can see forward is you know, what, you know, tell people to look at the stock prices. There's something going on there. If you're, you know, on board with the vaccines, why are the drug making stocks going down? Why are there all these injuries and reports of deaths? Why are the insurance companies starting to, you know, my job in coming out is not so much to provide the, you know, the justice to this, but to raise consciousness, to save lives, to convince those people who've been brainwashed. And that's why I'm speaking out. How this unfolds, Gary, in terms of how do we get justice? How do we stop this? There's a lot of different things I can't control, but I do think it'll be a political thing where one of the pinch points is. I also do think that the insurance companies are going to be pitted against pharmaceutical companies, and businesses in corporate America are going to turn on each other, which will raise consciousness as well. I think the biggest goal we have is to raise consciousness of the crime that's been committed. And then from there, we can figure out how to deal with it. But that's been one of my goals, is to raise consciousness.
I agree with that. Thank you, Edward. But doesn't that also bring something into light that none of us would have known about? I'm sure you would have, because you were in the field, but none of the rest of us knew until recently that Vanguard and Berkshire Hathaway and State Street and all these other major players that the average American knows nothing about, they own a lot of interest or control a lot of the investment money from the vaccine makers and hospitals and the vaccine testing kits. I mean, they've got so many assets. And at some point, I think it will be worth seeing which of these groups start to no longer support what is going on just to make money or to control the investment of money. They're going to say there's a larger good. There's a greater good that has to be realized. We cannot continue to make money if we know that something that is being used by a mass of the public, not just in the United States, but worldwide, is wrong. So I realize you signed a confidentiality agreement with BlackRock after you left the firm. So I'm not going to ask you to discuss that. I don't want you to violate their terms. But could you please speak finally here in the context of the BlackRock's competitors in gobbling up corporate assets from practically every industry imaginable, like Vanguard, and there's also State Street, as I mentioned, and these are the people that ultimately are the policymakers and opinion leaders. They decide more than anyone else on the planet what actually happens, because they control so many industries, though their faces and names are almost unknown to the average person. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, Vanguard is the largest asset holder in BlackRock. So in effect, these huge investment conglomerates own and control the investments in the global corporate regime and therefore have an enormous say in their strategies as well. And looking back on your own career, how do these mega transnational investment firms contribute to the world's crisis or problems today? Final question, well, please.
Yeah, no, this is a good question. So there's something that needs to be explained. Prior to 2000, most of the money was managed by people like myself, called fundamental investors, that when I was a portfolio manager and I held my 70 or so odd companies in my portfolio, I would vote on the shareholder vote. I would make the vote. There was something that happened in the early 2000s that grew to be a huge phenomenon and trend. Fundamental investing went on the decline, and something called passive investing went on the rise. And so Vanguard and State Street and BlackRock have all gathered what's called a tremendous amount of passive investments. They're called ETFs. They're index funds, for lack of a better word. And what's interesting is that Charlie Munger wrote an article, I think, in the Wall Street Journal, or at least spoke to it, where he is complaining now about the concentration of power in these index funds, because the voting, there's no portfolio manager per se that votes on the shareholder votes. And I don't know how it works at these firms, but we need to look at who votes for these big blocks of shares that control. So that is a pinch point, right? Who is voting on all these passive shares? Whereas in the old days, you know, individual portfolio managers would make decisions, and those decisions were not concentrated into any one hand. There was no one individual that powerful that could do anything other than vote. So it's an interesting question that needs to be asked. Who is voting for these index passive investment funds? Is it the higher up executives at these firms? Is it a committee? How is that done? And how are they influencing these companies they hold? So there could be a concentration of power issue. It's very interesting. And Charlie Munger's actually, you know, upset about that, Warren Buffett's partner. So it's one oligarch getting angry at other oligarchs, I guess. But, you know, that was an interesting article I saw recently. So, you know, I haven't looked into the matter that closely because my former profession, fundamental investing, is only 15% of the daily volume in the stock market. That's another problem. Fundamental investors uncover fraud and see things coming, whereas passive investors just blindly buy things. So some of the market signals have been lost where, you know, as a greater good collectively, I think it was better when fundamental investors were making collective individual decisions rather than giant passive investing that rewards companies for merely being in an index and not judged on the merits of their business or, you know, ethical behavior. Does that make sense, Gary?
Yes, it does. But add into that, the national debt is now $30 trillion. But Richard Gale and I took the time to look at all debt indices, and we came up with the total debt of the United States. That means all mortgage, credit cards, student debt, state debt, city debt, corporate debt, and federal debt, unfunded liabilities and entitlements, to be $230 trillion. That has nothing to do with derivatives. That's a different game. Well, this will never be paid back. No. In effect, when we were critical of Greece that had 147% debt to their gross domestic product, we called them a financial basket case, and then Goldman Sachs went to exploit that. But now we're at 1,200% debt to gross domestic product. If you look at all the debt, but no one wants to open that door and see how much in debt we are. We are bankrupt. But the debt is being shuffled on the back of consumers. Also, many banks are insolvent. One analyst estimates that only 3% of wealth is hard assets. The remaining 96-97% is debt. So this is clearly unsustainable. Then on top of it, nations are dumping billions of dollars off their printing presses into the pandemic. Where do you see all this heading? And are we not in the position now to see a challenge to how we've been doing our financing in the United States?
That's an interesting entree into what I was thinking and many of my colleagues were thinking before COVID. We knew there was a super sovereign debt bubble blowing across the globe because, as you pointed out earlier, during the great financial crisis, they bailed out the banks and the insurance companies. And, you know, that debt did not disappear. It went into the central bank's balance sheet and all the central bank's balance sheets across the globe. And central banks are the ones that fund governments. And so the corporate fraud jumped into bank fraud in 2008-09. And now I believe fraud has jumped into the central banks and the governments. And that's what we see. And, you know, I and my friends were trying to figure out how does this blow up and what does it look like and what would that mean? And when COVID came around, and again, to your point, I don't know whether COVID was created or a convenient excuse, but you know, I put out a series of tweets in May of 2020 that predicted what might happen if this was cover for a debt bubble, and it's almost exactly my dystopian movie is what I couched it in, almost came true to the actual timing. I said the movie begins in the beginning of 2022, Freedom's Last Stand. And if I was in charge of the money supply and I knew that it was going to blow up and I had no control over it, I would create a system of controls under the pretense of something else so that when it does blow up, you know, your travel is restricted. You can point to other things like a virus as the cause of all the problems. You would set in the digital security, you know, vaccine passports turns into security digital ID, and social credit score. And so that, you know, I can't prove any of this, but, you know, we were trying to figure out when this thing blows up, how are the powers that be, so to speak, or the governments of the world going to deal with this? And I think
they've already told us. Edward, they told us. The Great Reset, the fourth, they said you're going to own nothing. What they intend to do is take all the debt in the world and forgive all of it. So there'll be no debt, but we will have no asset. We'll rent.
Correct.
And so therefore they can control everything they've done wrong, but more importantly, control our futures. So, and they're not hypothesizing. They're out beating the drums everywhere on the fourth industrial revolution and the Great New Reset. We will continue our conversation. We're out of time for our Progressive Commentary Hour. First, thank you for getting in there and sharing some insights, especially insights from a perspective that we wouldn't normally have. And keep up the courage, I know you will, to tell the truth, because very few people in the history of Wall Street and financial marketing have come forward to tell the truth, except after they've been convicted of a crime and end up, you know, coming forward. Then they tell us the truth, but you had everything to lose and still you came forward, so you get our respect. Thank you, Edward Dowd.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate your time, and just happy that people like you are spreading truth.
We're a bunch. We're not just a few now. We're growing, and hopefully we'll continue to, and the public is awakening, and that's a good sign. Thank you all for watching and listening. If you find anything that we have shared to be of value, please share it. Remember, we don't do any public relations, none. It's all word of mouth. And yet last year, we had a huge number of people share the information from our programs. Thank you and have a nice day.